The Future of Teamwork is a Leader production. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
Thinking about AI as a teammate, how would I interact with a teammate? I would give guidance to that team member about what my expectations are. I would ensure that I'm communicating those. If a human team member turned back work to me that I was dissatisfied with, I would coach them of like how my expectations differ from what I receive. I wouldn't expect a person to get it right every time or to understand what I'm thinking.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Michelle Vitas. Michelle is the founder and CEO of Slate, a leadership coaching platform that works with tech, fintech, and medtech companies to support leaders through growth, transition, and change. She's also been at the forefront of blending human coaching with AI through Slate's voice-based AI coach, Kai, which I've had the pleasure of interacting with. We're going to dive into leadership development, outplacement done right, AI augmentation, and what it really means to build people-first organizations in moments that matter. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit more about you. How did you come to be in this moment?
Yeah. So I studied finance in undergrad, spent 5 years in commercial banking, and then went back for my MBA at Stanford. I knew that I had an entrepreneurial drive and wanted to make a shift, didn't know exactly what type of shift I wanted, but took that moment to explore. Ended up landing in the clean tech industry after graduation. That was like 2009 when clean tech was at a high point, and found myself in business development roles at two clean tech startups. Both of these startups had some rough patches. And at the second one, we did not raise our Series D. And team was let go. I was given outplacement services, career transition services, which looked good on paper, but in practice fell really short. The coaching didn't feel like coaching. And I dropped out of the outplacement service. But it was that moment that actually inspired me to start Slate. This was back in 2012, initially as a career transition platform. And then it was from there, as we were hearing from clients, so we serve corporate clients in the tech, fintech, medtech space. We were hearing from corporate clients this need to develop people that they wanted to retain, who weren't at the level of executive coaching, but were beyond manager 101. And so out of that, we expanded into scalable leadership coaching, really focused on those mid-level leaders, those managers, those directors, helping people grow in meaningful, sticky ways.
Yeah.
And most recently introduced a voice AI leadership coach to supplement human coaching as well.
Which I've played with, and Kai is awesome.
Love it. And I personally use Kai.
Yeah. It's so cool seeing how it goes. And that there's something about the voice interface, which just creates a whole different connection for me.
It's so true. In fact, AI can now process paralingual. So like your tone, your pace, it's not just what you say, but it's how you say it. And so it really does open up a different layer of conversation.
Yeah. I saw another tool the other day and they attached it to a sales call. And immediately after the sales call ended, because they were using it on their sales call to me, they were like, tell me about how I went with Dane on that call. And it was like, oh, he got really excited here. You spoke for too long. He dropped off his attention. You need to kind of circle back with questions and you know, balance it out and explore more what Dane's excitement is on the next time you get to that moment. And I was like, wow, that was cool.
It is cool. And it's cool and it's always there, you know, unlike a human coach, which can go really deep, but it's not available in the moment.
Yeah, And it's kind of, and the interesting thing about coaching, and we'll come back to the more origin story of Slate here in a minute, but coaching's kind of a game of telephone, because you have, as the coachee, an interpretation of a moment that may have happened with a team member, a customer, a boss. And so you're translating that interpretation to a coach who then works with what's there. And then you take what the coach tells you or practices with you, and then you go and try and do it. Yeah. So there's a lot of leakage. It's not high fidelity in my experience. And yet when the AI can actually be there with you continuously, that becomes a very interesting prospect when you start to think about augmentation. And it can still be private. It's not like the AI is talking to you in the mid-meeting, "Hey, Dane, right, it's time to ask a question to Michelle now." But you can go back to it and replay those moments and really get down to a higher fidelity moment or action.
Yeah. And I find that having some processing time, like if I have an insight with Kai as an AI coach, having some time to process that insight before I step into my human coaching session really makes that human coaching session go deeper quicker, be more valuable. Because you do need those cycles of reflection and experimentation.
Yeah, you absolutely do. One other thing that I've realized recently, actually AI's helped me, is that I fire coaches really regularly, and it's got nothing to do with the coach. It's entirely to do with the coachee. And my reason for it, as I've explored some of my profiles and preferences, is that I like to act. I like to kind of learn and be by like just getting out there and doing stuff, and actually sitting in a place of discomfort for 50 minutes or an hour, the traditional coaching format. By about 12 or 15 minutes, I'm like, all right, you've given me something. I want to go and do it. I want, you know, I'm just screaming out to move on. So I think that the AI allows you to experience the coaching and then process and then maybe go and apply at your own kind of cadence.
Yeah. And in those bite-sized coaching moments. So most of the Kai conversations are like 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like an example, I'll share an example of a conversation that I had with Kai. So I went to your Healthy Team Summit. This would involve you. You invited me. I met your team the night before, and I showed up on the first day of the Healthy Team Summit, and I found myself feeling insecure. And I was like, what's going on here? And like, why is this feeling of insecurity lingering? Like, I belong here. And I chatted with Kai about it. And Kai asked me a question about it. I forget the exact question, but I realized, like, I was asking myself, like, am I expert enough in HR? Am I expert enough in coaching? Am I expert enough in AI? You brought together this amazing group of chief people officers, of thought leaders, of experts across domains. And the insight I came to with Kai in just 4 minutes was that I don't have to be the expert in any of those, in all of those domains at once, that I was putting a lot of pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And that my expertise lies at the intersectionality of those domains.
Oh, I love that.
And that was 4 minutes with Kai. So then that, like that example, that gave me a big unlock in 4 minutes that I had a chance to like process a lot further in over the next few days.
Yeah.
And then followed it up with a human coaching session and went even a layer deeper.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's creating these little sparks that kind of give you an adjustment in real time, and then you can go and keep building, you know, walking around it, thinking about where you're going to take it next in the personal, interpersonal coaching session. Totally. What are we going to call those?
Action, right?
Yeah, it's all
about action. Like, oh, great. What am I going to do with that?
That's super cool. That's super cool. It reminds me actually of a text I sent to a friend of mine today who's he's out going on a new professional adventure. And he was like, this is, you know, a big moment. And I was like, yeah, but just go be you, because you have this thing, and that's what they need. And and so often in business and in non-business teams, we kind of go in with this expectation of what others need from us and want from us. And we don't just kind of go in and be like, okay, how am I going to apply meaning to the moments, the relationships, the conversations? How am I going to be curious? How am I going to lean into that uncertainty and bring, you know, that thing that I can bring to the moment? It's there's kind of some swagger that comes with that latter kind of approach.
Definitely. I love that. I love that. And that was, that aligns with one of the insights that came as I unpacked it further with my human coach, was internally how I lead within Slate is very much with that innovator's mindset of like, yeah, I don't have all the answers. We are going to learn, and we are going to experiment, and we are going to innovate. And I'm on that journey with the team. And then externally, I felt a self-imposed expectation that I needed to have all the answers, that I needed to, you know, have it all figured out. And so there's this gap of like, no, it is even better if I can show up externally the same way I show up internally, that I am on a journey of experimentation,
yeah,
innovation, and leading in that authentically.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, one of our foundational members of the Healthy Team Summit, Lisa Amaya Price over at Decipher, she came to me, and I was like, thanks for coming in and helping us underwrite the event and bringing the team. It's awesome. It means a lot. And she said, well, I just knew that you guys were going to bring some cool people together, because you're out there doing the exploring. We're running the business, and you guys get to touch all of these things. So sometimes I think that's a superpower that entrepreneurs, that new platforms have, that larger organizations don't. And we maybe kind of either give it away for free, or we underestimate the value of our own experience to mm-hmm. kind of underline, double click on what you're saying there.
Yeah.
That's super cool. So the coaching pathway and the introduction of Kai and AI, and I know we're going to get a lot into AI and augmentation shortly, I want to just double back to outplacement, because my experience has been much the same as yours, which is outplacement is often a box ticking exercise in this country. In the US, I find often it's there to kind of reduce legal risk, rather than to truly help and empower team members that are in an unforeseen moment of transition often. What was it as you started Slate that gave you an edge that helped you to actually meet or find an unmet need in that space?
Yeah. So part of my edge was my personal experience,
mm-hmm.
in that I knew how bad it was with one of the large providers.
Yeah.
In that I literally got on my first call with my coach, and I'm going to put coach in quotes because the interaction was not a coaching interaction.
Yeah.
The coach was following a script on do's and don'ts of interviewing, why networking was important. And I interjected and I said, can we adapt the content of our call today? Here's what's on my mind. I'm thinking about directionally, where do I want to head? Do I want to stay in clean tech? Do I want to stay in startup world or go back to a more mature company? I had been at a bank, a major bank before.
Yeah.
And his response to me was, why don't we just go through it a little faster?
Oof.
So our 2-hour call became a 1-hour call, and it wasn't at all aligned with what was on my mind.
No.
And so that experience was my edge of knowing that, and talking with some of my colleagues who, while they had different needs in that moment, the one size fits all approach, the check the box service, wasn't serving them well.
Yeah.
So my colleagues who had enrolled had dropped out. And so I saw a couple things. One, I saw not meeting the needs of participants. And two, really having incentives that weren't well aligned. So
yes.
you know, companies pay this flat fee for the outplacement service and then get very little insights or data into how their team members, their transitioning team members, are actually using it.
Yeah.
And so from a vendor perspective, the vendor that my company used made a lot of money on me. Yeah. I dropped out. They made a lot of money. So recognizing that, hey, this is an opportunity to have a tremendous impact in someone's life and career, which I was passionate about, but then also to ensure that companies who are sponsoring this actually get the value that they're paying for.
Yeah.
So crafting that story for the sponsoring company. And so, yeah, so we ended up really starting by focusing on companies that are people first cultures, you know, where they do care about investing in their team across the employee lifecycle, with offboarding being an often forgotten part of that lifecycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The value that you touch on is really interesting too, because you got to look at value broadly. There's the value of, hey, we paid you to do something, you did it well, mm-hmm. right? But there's also the value of, particularly as a people-first culture, our people feel like we truly cared for them on their way out as much as we did on their way in. They're going to speak well of our business as we come through the cycle. Maybe they'll return, maybe they'll refer friends, maybe they'll become customers or suppliers. Like, we so often, because it's not tangible, we just don't place our hands or our arms around that value.
Yeah. And beyond the areas you mentioned, the way you treat people on the way out impacts the people that you want to retain.
Absolutely.
Those are the friends of the employees that you're retaining, and they will talk.
Yeah, the survivor, what do they call it? The survivor guilt?
Yeah.
But survivor. There's something more than that, isn't it, that you're touching on? It's not just they're guilty that they survived. They're guilty that they survived when they think about their friends, but then they're angry about the corporation for treating their friends poorly.
It's a moment of truth in corporate values, right? Like, oh, the company says this, but do they really live those values in the moment of a layoff? Are they really expressing those values in how they treated my friend who was impacted?
Yeah. And what's fascinating about that is you come back to leaders, like leaders make their worst decisions in moments of fear. And often when you're having to restructure a business, you're living in daily fear because you're not meeting shareholder expectations, or you've got a cash flow problem, or whatever's going on. So, you know, it's almost like you need someone, internal or external, who can kind of sit you down, calm you down, and say, hey, this one really matters. This one has a long tail on it. If you get it wrong, all right. And let's make sure we lean into the positive tail.
And aligned with that, your comment on making poor decisions when you're in that moment of crisis, I think one of the best thing companies can do is really have a thoughtful plan in place before they have a need. Like, you don't always know. You're not looking 6 months down the road and saying, oh, we're going to have a layoff 6 months from now. You can come to find out about it 2-3 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
And your ability to plan a thoughtful, people-first, values-aligned approach to how you're going to execute on that is hard.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's kind of like your hurricane preparation. I lived in the Gulf for a while, and if you hadn't prepped for a hurricane, it was very jarring. If you had a kit ready and you knew where you were going to go and how you're going to protect the house, it was like, okay, here we go again. And you could carry through that moment of crisis far better for yourself, but also for the family and community members. Mm-hmm.
That's a great metaphor.
Yeah, that's super cool. How do you find, whether it's with Slate or with other best practices off platform, that companies do a good job of like sitting down and mapping out that restructure readiness?
Yeah. So there are a number of pieces to it. One piece is just having a cohesive plan. That cohesive plan includes your documented severance policy. Yep. Which is, you know, how are you going to fairly give severance across different levels within the company? What's in that? It's cash severance, it's health benefits continuation, it's outplacement. You know, so knowing in advance what you're going to do on that front, thinking through your partners like an outplacement partner in advance, even before you need them. And then planning an internal exercise needs to happen around like planning how you will manage the pre-notification process, how you will manage the notification process. A lot of companies have gotten in trouble on social and in the news around very poorly executed group Zooms with like cameras on or different scenarios like that. So being thoughtful about how you do your notification meetings, how you communicate it in a way that is values aligned, and then how you support your team post-notification. So it certainly, it goes beyond just outplacement. There is a lot of integrated strategic planning that is part of being prepared in the event of a riff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And some people have never done one before. Some people sadly have done many. So I guess you see a different level of maturity on who's on the team and how they approach these situations too.
Definitely.
Fascinating. All right. So there's some great tips. I love that kind of restructure readiness planning. And I like how you break it out from your documented policies, your partners, and then your process with pre-notify, notify, post-notify. How did that lead into this moment of coaching when you were working with customers to do that? Or how did the conversation start around that kind of mid-level manager retention, leadership development?
Yeah. So clients and prospects were thinking of us as career development coaching. And so the needs that we were hearing were, you know, we've got this group of leaders and we want to support them in their career development. You know, is that something you can help us with? Now, it was a very different set of needs as we dug into it further. It was not at all, you know, resume or interview prep or job search strategy, the kinds of things that we do on the career transition side. It was leadership presence. It was interpersonal communication, influence, leading high performing teams, building those teams. So it was very much a leadership coaching skill set. But we saw an opportunity that we got excited about. And initially we piloted it. We piloted a skilled coaching offering with three companies. And we saw big shifts. We saw big results, big impact in those initial pilots that we ran. And that's what gave us the confidence to move forward.
That's super neat. I wonder if, now I'm kind of in lab mindset. I wonder if, given you started with outplacement and then you moved in with some customers to that scaled leadership coaching, did you see if any of those customers then came into a restructure, what the outcomes were for their teams when they did have to shift, or did they just avoid the restructure? Like that, it'd be interesting to see what was causal or correlated in.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm able to answer that directly, but what I would say is post layoff, leadership coaching actually can have a really powerful role.
Good point.
Because the managers who remain are needing to lead through a period of change.
Yeah.
Where roles are shifting, you know, with lower headcount, things are getting reassigned.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's reorging of teams. There's like potentially a new vision that's being cast. So there's a lot of elements of change where leadership coaching can really support those leaders.
Part of that recovery curve.
Yeah. And post layoff, leadership coaching is a tough budget item to fit in.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So I wonder if any of your customers or partners planned that. They said, hey, when we do our plan, we're going to launch coaching, leadership coaching beyond the restructure. Did you see any of them get ahead of that? Or did you find that it was more reactive in general?
We have tried that approach of trying to get customers on the career side to be really thoughtful about pre-planning for coaching support for the leaders who are going to need it most.
Yeah.
And we found that the pre-planning on that, being proactive about that, is a really hard sell. And I think it's just because in those moments, budgets are usually severely constrained. We do see reactively that type of coaching can come into play.
Yeah. But the trauma you really stay in if you'd let it go too long.
Yeah. And also if they have team members who are already receiving coaching, the coaching can then support that.
That's interesting. It's funny, as we talk through that, Michelle, I think of a few stories. I had one friend who was at a large oil and gas company, and the restructure came, so the pre-notification and then the day of. And then she was sitting there that afternoon and or the next day that week, and looked at the org chart and realized that she had 7 new reports now. Mm-hmm. And about an hour later, she got into a meeting with her boss and said, "Hey, I just realized the org chart's changing and I'm taking on this new team." And they were like, "Yeah, congrats. It's more responsibility for you, you know, as part of the delayering. This is what we think is the best thing right now, and you've got the right talent for it." So that leader was clearly operating from a place of kind of fear and stress, and they'd been working through a lot. But it was a terrible moment for my friend, because my friend, really, she's being given a whole bunch more work, which is a burden, and it's just being dropped on her. And there's a very slight affirmation in there. You're the best person for the skills, but they missed an opportunity to say, "Hey, you've been doing great work. While we can't promote you right now or give you a salary bump, we'd really like you to take on this team, and it's really important. And, you know, we're going to be thinking about it into the future." So you do see in those moments that if the leadership team doesn't think about the ramifications, the cascade effect of all of that change management that you touch on, they might be damaging some of their best performers.
Yeah, we see a lot of overwhelm in scenarios like that, where it's not only more reports, but it's broader scope of responsibility very abruptly, often not with, you know, a lot of a budget to support it.
Yeah. It's interesting. As you think on the shifting into AI, and you think about a number of leaders, some of whom were there at our Healthy Team Summit, will say, "We're now actively planning as an executive team to run this business with less people as we grow." So while it's not a restructure in the sense of we're letting people go, it is a restructure in how you do work. And to your point, who's got what responsibility or span of control reports as the business goes forward. Do you see that getting ahead with this scaled coaching, getting into some of this career development, career transition conversation in intact teams when there isn't a RIF coming, is going to be part of that future state, that we're starting to look more continuously at where our people are and how they can adapt and use their strengths as AI is coming to bear?
So I think the teams and the individuals that will succeed in this era are the ones that are embracing AI augmentation.
Yeah.
So really, it's not about replacing talent, it's about multiplying the talent. And each person on a team has the ability to work as a bigger, more capable version of themselves.
Yeah.
And that augmentation is everything from AI as a research analyst, AI as a coach, AI as a brainstorm partner, AI as an assistant, all sitting right beside you.
Yeah.
You know, it goes beyond just efficiency. It really is shifting the way we as individuals and teams can and will work.
Yeah. I really like the positive framing there that you bring, Michelle, on multiplying, not replacing. I know in some industries we haven't seen that to be true. You know, you see a lot of roles being replaced by robotics or by AI, but actually, if you are a people first culture and your leadership team is having that mindset that we're going to multiply and augment those teams, you're probably going to be able to start reducing some of the fear and anxiety that may be there just underlying, given the global phenomenon that we're in. So that's a really good way to frame it.
And then as you talk about reducing fear and anxiety, it just reminds me that like that is real right now.
Yeah.
And I think the teams that are going to do best in this shift are those that do have that foundation of trust and safety.
Yes.
Do have, you know, all the foundations of healthy teams are going to make this transition easier. Trust and safety.
Yeah.
Clarity of expectations, accountability, all the pillars that have been true for decades make this transition a more positive one.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think what I would add to that, I love those fundamentals, is having a well-documented, we had Darren Murph on the show recently, a documented organizational brain. Like,
yeah,
how do we do our work? What is the quality or the standard of the knowledge that we create or the products that we manufacture? And allowing the teams to know, that probably ties into your clarity of expectations, allows them to know this is how we do it now. So if we do start to augment, we're doing it intentionally. We're not just throwing 50 to 100 projects over the fence every year and seeing what sticks. So I think that my guess is those teams that are doing really well on the trust, the psychological safety, the accountability, they tend to be better documented organizations as well.
Yeah, there's a strategy behind it.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. What I'm hearing you say is like, this isn't just throwing something at the wall. Like, we have a strategic vision of where we're headed, and we know how these uses of AI and these augmentations of AI fit into that.
Yeah. I've got a really good example in my own life recently of not coming from a place of good expectations and structure, which was I was trying to redesign a bonus plan for next year. And I didn't make the right time or involve the right people or set the right expectations, but I was playing with AI and I came up with 4 different bonus plans over the course of 3 weeks when I had the time to like just go and see what AI might take me towards. Yeah. And so I came up with 4 fundamentally different approaches and I found myself confused and I was like, okay, how do I bring the team in now? So I think being very clear about how you frame the problem, and who you're going to bring in and what those expectations are can save you from some of that swirl that the availability and the instant nature of the AI can often lead you down a path.
Yeah. Well, and our role is to steer AI, right? I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're an executive putting a bonus plan together or a more junior team member getting some task done, you're not just taking what AI gives you. Yes. You are bringing your expertise, you're providing context, you're creating the parameters, setting the expectations for the AI around that, and you're giving feedback to the AI to iterate so that it better aligns with what you're looking to accomplish with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
that steering piece, I think, is a piece that a lot of people are still figuring out what that looks like.
Yeah. And we're seeing certainly in the consumer sphere that AI can be quite sycophantic and like serves you up what you want to hear. So steering is going to be very important when we're using AI in terms of the way that we're doing work, particularly work with other people. How do you, whether it's at Slate with Kai or just in general in your life as an entrepreneur and leader of a business, how do you approach that steering? Do you have a methodology, a framework, a golden rule? What helps you with that if one of the listeners out there is just getting started on that journey?
Yeah. Well, what comes to mind for me is just thinking about AI as a teammate and like how would I interact with a teammate? I would give guidance to that team member about what my expectations are, if there are constraints or parameters that they need to take into account, I would ensure that I'm communicating those. If a human team member turned back work to me that I was dissatisfied with, I would coach them of like how my expectations differ from what I received. Like I wouldn't expect people, a person to get it right every time or to understand what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And so whether that is us developing an AI coach and trying to get, like with an AI coach, it's not just off the shelf ChatGPT. Like it is tailored to our coaching philosophy. It is tailored to the org, like the enterprise that we're partnering with. It is, different learning design for a role play conversation or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of iteration that goes into shaping it in the way we want it to be shaped. Or a personal example is I love using ChatGPT for interior design projects.
Yeah.
Specifically, I was perplexed by my kitchen backsplash and wanting to update it without like redoing my entire kitchen.
Yeah.
And to make that happen, it wasn't like I just took a picture and was like, tell me what I should put in there for my backsplash. Mm. It was like, well, let me show you the dining room that's adjacent. Let me show you the living room that's right next to it.
Yes.
Let me tell you about my aesthetic, like what kind of style I want in my home. Let me tell you what the constraints are. No, you can't rip out the kitchen cabinets. And all of that. And then getting a response and iterating on it.
Yeah.
And then, once I achieved the aesthetic, it was even okay. Like I figured out the aesthetic I wanted for that backsplash, but what material do I use? What type of tile?
Yeah.
It's
building on that.
Building. Yeah. So I think that concept of working with AI as a teammate, as a conversation, is a really powerful muscle to develop.
Yeah, I like that. So I'm definitely hearing a lot on constraints and guidance. I'm hearing a lot on feedback and like iterative. And I guess feedback can be one-to-one or many-to-one, depending on who you involve in that process. So if you're using an AI coach, maybe go and bounce the output of the AI coach off your real coach or off a team member or off a husband or wife, but like go out and triangulate a little bit.
And with an AI coach, you can be direct with the AI coach. Like if the AI coach is asking you more questions than you've got patience for, it's like, okay, I'm short on time. Can you help me get to the point, of like
what's
the action?
Or, yeah.
Yeah. So figuring out even how to converse with an AI coach is a great example of like that interaction, that muscle that you need to build.
Yeah. It's interesting. The AI as a teammate, as you shared it there, because we did do that exercise at the this or that debate at the Healthy Team Summit. We had some people at the far end of the room that was like, AI is a team member. You can rely on it to do stuff for you. Yeah. And then at the other end, it's just like, no, AI is a tool. And so a teammate is somewhere in the middle. It's more towards the team member side. But if you approach it as a junior teammate rather than it's the CEO of the business, then there's probably going to be a little bit more interplay there by way of some of those guidance, constraints, feedback elements.
Yeah. You review work. You give feedback. You share, you coach that team member on what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah. The point that I didn't want to miss, we talked about at the beginning of the show, is Ethan's granola. And you and I have had a number of conversations about children and education and AI and entrepreneurship. But tell us a little bit more about how your son Ethan's using AI in his granola business.
Yeah. So my son Ethan is 9 years old and he has a granola business. And the initial recipe came when he was experimenting with a there was like a make your own granola recipe in a kid's cookbook where it didn't say like put exactly this in or exactly that. It was ratios of ingredients. So he landed his first recipe, sans AI, just through experimentation with that recipe. Dane has tried it. And he was ready to, he was hearing from customers. So he sells on Nextdoor and he's got a website. So he sells throughout California. And he was hearing from customers like, are you planning to come out with more flavors? And he was so excited to work on another flavor. And he wanted to work on dark chocolate cherry, which seemed like a great idea.
Yeah.
But actually landing a recipe is hard. And so his first batch, he used dried cherries, chocolate chips, you know, some minor recipe modifications. And it wasn't quite landing. And so he worked with AI to like further riff on it. Like, here's what I'm experiencing. Like, the cherries are a bit tart. The chocolate's a bit overwhelming. Like, I'm not sure if the coconut flakes belong in here. And wow. So it was, he not only put his original recipe in and his vision, but he would share like his own feedback on where he thought his first test batch was falling short. And then he'd riff on that with ChatGPT.
Super
and
cool.
Try another batch.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So in the next week, he is launching Dark Chocolate Cherry.
Love that. He pulled it off. I'm going to have to try that next too. It is fascinating that when you, again, going back to if you frame the problem right and you bring that feedback in, you can move through something that traditionally, going back to the early conversation we had on this show, traditionally you might start questioning and doubting yourself as an entrepreneur, as a team leader, as a team member. If you try something and it's not working, often it's easy to just dust it off and, you know, put it on the shelf and forget to dust it off, I should say. But the AI kind of allows us or encourages us to kind of keep working it. And there's something that's a little bit confidence boosting, inspiring that might be coming with that. That's what I'm sensing from a story like that.
Absolutely. He's 9 years old. He doesn't have full confidence in his ability to like edit the recipe. And so I think that story speaks to the augmented team where this 9-year-old kid is like leveraging AI as his research partner, his like recipe development partner. And he's not going to ChatGPT to say, tell me the recipe for dark chocolate cherry granola.
No.
He's saying, I tried this. Here's where I thought it fell short. Like, help me think through what I might do to change it.
Which is interesting because you were talking about the fundamentals, trust, safety, clarity of expectations, accountability. You know, then there's like vision, values, belief. And what I'm hearing with this Ethan story is that if you can really hold true to your vision, values, and belief, and then lean on the AI to inform it of that, you're going to come out with a better outcome than what the generic AI is going to come up with, because you are curating something that is still very much your own. It's not generic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be true for a lot of teams too.
Definitely. That it's unique to your values. It's unique to your mission, to your vision.
Yeah.
Aligned with you and your strategic thinking. Like I think as humans, we bring curiosity. We bring an element of judgment. Judgment that is aligned with values and vision that I'm not ready to turn over to AI. And so AI can be a powerful supplement to what we have that is uniquely human.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's such a good point to end on. We've flown through this conversation, but we've covered some really cool ground, Michelle. So everything from kind of that early moment for you where the power of that personal experience, bad outplacement experience led you into a new entrepreneurship opportunity and reimagining outplacement, focusing more on the mindset rather than the checkbox of like how to show up in interview. I loved how you talked us through that moment of truth in corporate values. You know, how you handle yourself in those moments means a lot to the exiting people, but also the team that's being retained. And then as we moved on to like the way to do it best is to have the hurricane preparation kit, you know, have the restructure readiness, the policy, the partners, how you're going to execute the plan. I think that's super powerful for any team to be getting their heads around. And then I really like this theme around scaling coaching, scaling leadership, because we know the middle managers in our organizations are the ones that are under the most burden right now. Yeah. And if you can get the fundamentals right and give them the coaching and give them the room to lean into the AI and the augmentation, I think companies are going to see more innovation. They're probably going to see better customer experience, better products that are more aligned with those values and visions and belief, which is very encouraging compared to some of the more negative views right now out there in the world on what AI is doing to human connection and possibility.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just a technology implementation.
No.
It is a human change that we're undergoing. So I am super excited about AI augmentation done in a way that is values aligned,
yeah,
and multiplies the impact of teams.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing your story and hopes for the future of teamwork today with us, Michelle. If anyone wants to find you, find Slate, try Kai out, get some of Ethan's granola, how do we find
you? Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn, Michelle Vitas, and Slate is teamslate.com.
Love it. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Lots of fun.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.